Welcome to Indie Author Answers, a podcast about the craft of writing and being an indie in the world of self-publishing. Each week, we'll read a chapter from an unpublished novel and critique it. To read along with the show, go to indieauthoranswers.com. To follow along from chapter one, go to jimheskett.com/part1. Or to get a recap of the first half of the story, go to jimheskett.com/recap. Now, let's get this mother started. So here's your host, Jim Heskett.
Howdy, partners. Welcome to IAA number 49, one away from the big 50. What's going to happen on the big 50th show, the big 50? Anything special? I don't know. Maybe you just have to tune in next week and find out. I might do a big deal. Maybe we'll have, I don't know, free punch and pie. We'll see. I don't know. Anyway, so hello, everyone. Welcome to Indie Author Answers. I am Jim Heskett, the guy at the beginning, that British dude, told you all that already. But sometimes I like to say it to remind myself who I am and why I'm here. Because ain't nobody paying me to do this shit. Anyway, welcome to another episode. Let's talk about some writing stuff, shall we? Let's do a little tip. And I wanted to talk about a piece of writing advice I heard from Dean R. Koontz. And I wrote this down as something to talk about a long time ago, and now I can't find the freaking quote, exactly what he said. And I think I heard it secondhand anyway. So this may not even be Dean R. Koontz who said this, and I'm not a huge fan of Dean Koontz. I've read a couple of his books. I read Intensity, which I thought was pretty good but could have used another edit, and one other one, which I don't even really remember now, but was pretty good. But anyway, so I'm not a huge fan, but I like this piece of writing advice. He said, I'll finally get to it, which you've been waiting for a minute and a half now. He said, the key to writing a good book is to raise a question in the reader's minds and then give them an answer that's surprising. And that's an oversimplification, and it sounds nice, and I like the way he put it. Now, I've talked often on this show about keeping your readers worried. Now, essentially, what I say there by keeping readers worried and raising a question in readers' minds is more or less the same thing. And it could all be boiled down to keeping a reader intrigued. Have you ever been reading a book and you get to the big plot twist in the book, you know, maybe 80 or 90% of the way through, you find the plot twist, and then you don't really care what happens after that? This happens to me a lot, like a book where there you get the typical plot twist 25%, 50%, 75%, and then one at 95%. And once I hit that last plot twist, and I know it's the final plot twist because it's the thing that changes everything, often I don't even really feel like finishing the book. And the problem there isn't that the question raised wasn't good enough and I wasn't worried enough. The problem there is that I don't care enough about the characters to see it all the way through. Because there's some books that I just read for the plot twists. Or I wouldn't say that I deliberately do that. I would say there have been books in the past that I kept reading even though I wasn't very interested because I knew there were plot twists coming and I wanted to be surprised. But anyway, I've been rambling. Let me get back on topic here. So raising a question in readers' minds and keeping readers worried, it's the same thing. It's about intrigue. It's about making your reader care about what's going to happen by not giving them all the information. This is a dangerous area. Kurt Vonnegut said, to hell with suspense, give readers all the information up front, which I don't know if he actually said that ironically or if he meant to say that, because it seems like strange advice. But if he didn't mean it ironically, then I disagree with that. But you do need to give your readers enough information up front that they're not confused. You know, you don't want your reader to be confused unless you can do it really, really well. One of my favorite writers is a guy named Max Berry, who wrote the books Lexicon and Syrup. And Syrup was later made into a movie. And in Lexicon, in the first couple chapters of that book, you have no idea what's going on. It starts off with a guy who's at an airport. Two guys grab him and drag him into a bathroom. And then they insert something like a needle into his eye, but he doesn't know what's going on. You as the reader don't know what's going on. but the way it's written is so compelling, and it raises so many questions that you don't mind the fact that you have no fucking idea what's going on, because it's so in you, like, you have to get answers, so you keep reading on. And that's what I think Dean Koontz is saying. You have to make your readers want to know the answers to the questions that you're raising. And then the second part of that piece of advice, give them an answer that's surprising. If you give them an answer they're expecting, then yes, they'll be a little bit satisfied that they've gotten an answer to the question, but they're also going to be kind of disappointed because it's what they were expecting. Like, I'm a huge fan of the show Lost. And I know that lots of people were disappointed in the ending of the show. And I think the reason people were disappointed, even though a lot of people misunderstood, and here's a, I'm sorry, spoiler alert, skip forward a few seconds if you haven't seen it and you're intending to watch it. People watched the show and they thought, oh, well, they were all dead. One, they didn't get it. And two, having answers to questions isn't as much fun as trying to figure out the answers to questions. So, you know, like, the show got worse as it went along. You know, yeah, I'm a fan of the show, but I'll admit that. Because they started answering questions. And one of the things the show did really well in the first few seasons was every time they answered a question, they introduced new questions. And that's another play on that Dean Koontz advice. Give them an answer that's surprising by raising another question. Then they go, okay, I found out that Bob was the killer, but now who's Bob's brother? Dun, dun, dun. That's the next thing we have to figure out, is who's Bob's brother, because that's important too, apparently, I guess, in the story that I just made up. So anyway, what I wanted to say about Lost is that as the show goes on, they're raising less questions as they're answering new ones. So as the show propels toward the end, there are fewer and fewer questions. And so it's just not as interesting, because you watch an episode and you go, wow, what did that mean? Why did this happen? And that's where the fun is, to ponder it. So if you can take that and apply that to your writing, to leave readers guessing and then give them something they didn't expect, that's how you hook them. That's how you get them to finish your book and buy your next book. And I hope all that made sense, because I realized I was just rambling and spitting all that out, and I hadn't intended to go talking about Lost, but it just kind of came up. Anyway, that's all I have to say about my tip of this week. And now we can go ahead and read some Problematic Virtue. This week we're reading Part 3, Chapter 25, and it's an Alex chapter. And the important thing to remember before we start this is, because this happened a long time ago, like in real life, it happened maybe 6 months ago, that we read a chapter way back in Part 1, where Alex and Brian were in Rocky Mountain National Park, and they were playing paintball, and Alex had never played before. And if you remember the dynamic in that chapter... or you probably don't remember because you probably haven't been listening for that long. But if you are an old enough listener, I don't remember. It's probably an episode, probably in the teens, maybe 10 to 15 around there, if you want to go back and listen to it real quick. In that episode, in the part one of the book, the dynamic was that Brian was the teacher and Alex was the student. Brian was the mentor. And so that was the first time that Alex smoked pot, was that day with Brian in Rocky Mountain National Park. And, you know, Brian won when they played paintball, but Alex was surprisingly good at it. That's one thing Brian commented on, even though Alex lost and he was disappointed by that. So now we flash forward. It's 3 years later. And that chapter, this chapter should act as a counteraction. That's not the right word. This chapter should rhyme with that chapter, and you'll see why as we go along. 25. Alex. Alex hid behind a dumpster, his gun at the ready. He placed a hand on the cold, rusted metal to spy around the edge. He tried to spy fresh footprints in the snow, but the abundance of tracks confused the old from the new. He reconsidered his strategy. After checking his watch, he became aware of his limited window of time. The sun hung low, so if he intended to find his target, he must act fast. He took a calculated risk by emerging blind from the dumpster, but he had to take that chance. Tick-tock. Too much hangs in the balance. Too much is at stake. Anyone who saw him wielding that large rifle-looking device with a bulbous tank at the top might think it strange or might misunderstand, but he had to risk that as well. Life is full of chances. No guts, no glory. Seize the day. Early bird gets the worm. He crossed the parking lot to a section of footpaths that meandered through the trees, thinking that maybe Brian would be walking amongst them. In the area next to the lot, a young mother and her child were giving a snowman a carrot nose. He thrust the paintball marker behind his back away from their prying eyes. The mother observed him. He smiled at her and moved past, trying not to draw attention to himself. Close call. Rookie mistake. When he reached the trees, he hunkered down, careful with every step. One twig breaking or one loud step into a patch of crunchy snow and it would be all over. Alex squinted and then detected a hint of color through the brown trees beyond the fence. Bingo. Brian was at the construction site, alone, undefended, vulnerable. I should have guessed. Brian sat on a large wooden electrical cable coil, staring at the ever-progressing half-building, the outside of which now wore a shiny Tyvek membrane. Alex raised his weapon and lined up Brian in his sights. "Got you dead to rights, chump," he said before he exhaled and pumped the trigger. The shot missed left, only by a little. The connected with the membrane building across from Brian, littering the surface with red circles. Brian scurried off the coil, looking thoroughly confused. He spun, trying to identify the source of the shot. Alex steadied himself again and pulled the trigger. Splat, dead on. The exploded paintball covered Brian's chest in red paint. Boom, right on target. Alex hustled through the slush and over the fence towards Brian, still a bewildered tourist. He came up to Brian's flank, and as Brian whipped around, he tipped, collapsing into the wet snow. Alex stopped a few feet short, closed one eye, and raised his marker. Brian tried to scoot backwards, away from, turning his face away from the weapon. "Alex, no, what are you doing? You're too close." Alex squeezed the trigger, shooting Brian in the stomach from 5 feet away. Brian rolled onto his side and gripped his belly. "What the hell are you doing? That hurts. You can't shoot an unarmed man with no mask at point-blank range. What if you'd hit me in the face? You'd knock out my damn eye." "I did what I did for king and country. I have no regrets," Alex said, laughing. He snorted, forcing the last of the meth down the back of his nasal passages. He grimaced at the delectably bitter chemical taste. "Maybe we need to get you some Kevlar, or some tampons, if that's more your thing." Brian sat up, wincing. "Ah, crap, that hurts. That was completely unnecessary. I hope you didn't break any of my ribs." "Oh, dude, cry me a river. You'll be fine. You're just getting too slow, old man. You lost." "Lost? You ambushed me. I don't even have my gun, which means this wasn't a fair fight." He stood up, wiping his red paint-covered hands on his jeans. "Whatever, that's enough. I just want to go home." "What are you always doing out here?" Brian scowled, but answered the question anyway. "Just looking at the building?" Alex surveyed the wooden frames, unfinished drywall, and construction records strewn about. "What in the hell for?" "Does it matter? I don't want to talk about it. Will you please get out of my way so I can go back to the apartment?" "Wait," Alex said. He had to ask. "That chick, the one you said was coming over the other day from your ethics class, what about her? Did she come over?" "Yeah," Brian said in a drawn-out, suspicious manner. "It wasn't a hallucination. That really happened." "Did you stick it in her?" Brian studied Alex, still scowling. "So what if I did?" Alex shut his eyes, feeling a headache begin to pulse at the back of his neck. The situation was as bad as he thought. "Is her name Megan?" "How did you know that?" Brian said, his eyes as big as dinner plates. Alex closed his eyes, momentarily unable to comprehend the sheer stupidity of his roommate's actions. "You dumb son of a bitch. I can't believe you. You fucked up big time. Do you have any idea who you just had sex with?" "What are you talking about? You know her?" "Yeah, I do. That chick is married to Wiles' brother." Brian took an involuntary step backwards. His hands trembled. What, you mean Chris Wiles? That can't be right. It's not possible. She never said anything to me about being married." "It can't be. Then this bitch played you, son. She lives with Wiles. They're roommates. You would have known this if you ever came by Wiles' house with me." Brian shook his head. "I had no idea. Married? How can that be possible? She's younger than me." "Well, Chris is off in the Navy or something, so you don't have to worry about him much. But if Wiles finds out about this, well, that's another story." You aren't going to tell him, are you? Are you joking? You think I want to see you get shot?" Brian thunked down in the snow, his breath coming in erratic gasps. "This can't be happening," he whispered. "Of all the women in Colorado, how in the hell did you pick her?" I met her at a laundromat." "Well, isn't that cute? I hope it was worth it." "You fucked up, son," Alex said. "She never even told me her last name," Brian said, staring into the snow. "Her last name is Wiles, you dumb shit. How in the fuck did you not know about her? How could you be so careless? Don't you know Chris Wiles?" "No, not really," Brian said, struggling to catch his breath. "He was never around when I was with Derek. I mean, I met him once or twice, and I'm positive he wasn't married then. I never saw him wear a ring, and Derek never said anything about it. He hardly ever talked about his brother. Wiles and I just talked business, never personal stuff anymore. How was I supposed to know?" Alex bared his teeth. "Because you know all those people in that whole fucking crew. Are you blind and deaf, or do you just have a death wish?" "I don't really talk to those people. Wiles always met me places to deliver weed, and he told me he lived with Chris." "Chris moved out a long time ago, dude. Where the fuck have you been?" Alex said. "How was I supposed to know who his roommate was? If I'd known she was married to Chris, I'm not friends with those guys. I didn't know." "What do you mean you're not friends with him? I know you've been around Wiles. He told me you're selling meth for him," Alex said, the jealous tone bubbling up to the surface. "Why the fuck are you selling meth for him? That's my gig. How long were you going to do this and not tell me about it?" "I made a deal with Wiles. We don't hang out or anything." "What kind of deal?" Alex said. "Is that really important right now? If Wiles had told me his brother was married to Megan, I wouldn't have slept with her." Brian leaned forward on his knees like a beggar, a pitiful sight. "Please, Alex, you gotta help me." "What do you expect me to do? I'm not gonna say anything to Wiles if that's what you're worried about. But you need to watch yourself. You've dug yourself in a pile of shit deep enough already here. He'll probably find out no matter what. You done fucked up big time, son." "Stop saying that!" Brian was a wreck, but he had created all this chaos through his own actions. Alex turned back toward the apartments and left Brian on his knees, shuddering in the snow. All right, so that's part 3, chapter 25, Alex. So now you should probably understand that the reason why I talked so much about that chapter in part 1 that was supposed to mirror this one is that now we see that Alex is apparently been playing paintball, and so he's good with it now. And whereas in part 1, that fight was done with honor, you know, they were chasing each other, Brian shot Alex with the paintball gun, and it was all like very much above board. Now we see that Alex has changed so much that he is sneaking up on Brian, he's shooting him with a paintball gun when Brian doesn't even have one, and then he shoots Brian at point blank range, which hurts Brian, which like bruises his ribs. So we can see how much Alex has changed and how much the dynamic between them has changed. Like way back in part 1, you couldn't have imagined Alex shooting Brian point blank with a paintball gun. He looked up to Brian way too much to do anything like that. And also in this chapter, we essentially have two parts. We have Alex hunting Brian, and then we have their conversation. And their conversation is actually, even though it goes on too long, and they both, this conversation becomes a little too circular, you know, they both like make the same point three or four times, which gets old. A lot of that could have been cut out. Even though there's a pretty long section of dialogue, it's pretty exciting and it's full of quite a bit of tension. But I do think I missed a huge opportunity for conflict in this chapter. I missed a huge opportunity for Alex to have internal conflict. Because the last time we saw Alex, I think the last time we saw Alex was when he saw Brian kissing Megan, and he wasn't sure if that had really happened. So what we missed out on was everything in between there, where Alex could have had the dilemma of, what do I do with this information? Because really, the only dilemma is there's two sentences here where he says he had to ask Brian. And then he said, that girl you brought over the other day. So there was no dilemma. There was no internal debate or conflict about what to do with it, which would have been a great opportunity for conflict. And then the second point of contention here, after Alex rails on Brian for sleeping with Megan, he turns the conversation over to the fact that Brian is selling meth for Wiles. And we get to one of Alex's core motivations here is that he's insanely jealous because he is the one who sells meth for Wilds, so he doesn't like the fact that Brian is also selling meth for Wilds. And so that we find there, the subtext there is that that has spurred on a lot of Alex's resentment towards Brian throughout this part. So the other thing we missed out on is the chance to see Alex revel in that jealousy. I think we got a little bit of it maybe hinted at before, but it's so sudden here that it's like it doesn't really explain Alex's behavior because we haven't had a chance to get accustomed to the fact that he's jealous about Brian. We just see it so suddenly here. He's like, that's my bag. Why the fuck are you selling meth for him? So it's all very sudden. It comes out of nowhere, and it's surprising, and it's a terrible missed opportunity for conflict. We should have seen Alex debating what to do, because now we know that Alex has decided to come to Brian first with this information, and we should have seen him debate what to do about it. There is going to be a chapter later where Alex debates whether or not to tell Wiles about Megan. And that's, there's some good tension there. But we, in this chapter, he says, Alex says to Brian, I'm not going to tell Wiles because I don't want to see you get shot. So it would seemingly spoil that future conflict, even though it does get brought up again. Okay, let's go back and look at a few things here. Let me read two sentences and see if you can spot what's annoying about this. He placed a hand on the cold, rusted metal to spy around the edge. He tried to spy fresh footprints in the snow, but the abundance of tracks confused the old from the new. Do you know what I'm going to say about this chapter? About this, these two sentences? What's wrong with it? It's the word spy. He placed a hand on the cold, rusted metal to spy around the edge. He tried to spy fresh footprints. So, there's nothing wrong with using the word spy. It's a pretty good verb. But the fact that it's used twice in the span of six words or seven words is a problem. There's a thing that I like to call word space. If you use a word that's kind of non-standard, you know, a word that's not the or he or she or a or walk, you know, any word that's really common, if you use a word different from that, you need to give it space from the next time you use it. Otherwise, it sticks out to readers. So if you use the word skedaddle or scramble, scramble is a good word. That's a verb I like. I like to use the word scramble when I'm talking about someone who's running and not doing a good job of it or is trying to get over something. I say they would scramble. If you used the verb scramble twice in one paragraph, that sticks out to readers, and they might not read through that and go, oh, he said scramble twice, and they were only one sentence apart. But it's the kind of thing a reader, they might only unconsciously notice it, but it's still going to bother them. So you have to be conscious of word space. And the fact that I use spy twice there in consecutive sentences is a problem, and that's something that I should have caught in editing and changed one of those verbs. So if you remember, or if you didn't, listen to the episode where I discussed the chapter in Rocky Mountain National Park. I started out that chapter in medias res where Brian is skulking through the woods and he's hunting. And I didn't even reveal that he was I just referred to him carrying a weapon. He was searching for his target. And then I didn't reveal that he was playing paintball until well into the chapter. I gave hints and then built up to it. And this chapter kind of works at the same way at the beginning. Alex hid behind a dumpster, his gun at the ready. It kind of works the same way. It gets to the point quicker because it's only in the third paragraph that we see he's holding a rifle-looking device with a bulbous tank. And so a reader would probably go, oh yeah, bulbous tank, it's paintball. I remember that. They play paintball. So he's searching for Brian, or we don't know that at first until it gets to the fourth paragraph where he says that we reveal who his target is, that he's looking for maybe Brian out among the trees. He sees the young mother and her child giving the snowman a carrot nose, which do people even do that anymore? I don't know. It's just this cliched, kind of cliched thing that would happen. And it's a pretty good reminder, though, that what time of year it is. So instead of saying he crept through the parking lot in March, Or instead of saying he crept through the parking lot with snow crunching under his foot, this way of seeing the mother and her child giving a snowman a carrot nose is a good variation on using snow to describe what time of year it is. Anyway, so then he sees Brian sitting back all alone at the construction lot. And remember, we've referenced the construction yard several times. So he shoots Brian. We get a couple shots, which this chapter kind of might have been fun from Brian's perspective to see this. It would have might have been too confusing. The chapters might have been too short if it had just been like 500 words. Then we switched to Brian for 150 words, then back to Alex. But I think of this, because I wrote this book originally as a screenplay, I think of it in screenplay terms. Like, it would have been cool to switch to Brian's POV to see the red splat appear on the Tyvek membrane over the unfinished building, and then more splats, and then Brian's running around, and then he gets hit in the chest. But it still kind of works from Alex's POV, because Alex is watching Brian scurrying around confused, and it's a nice little bit of tension here, because we're, you know, the reader will immediately think of Brian and wonder what's going on with him and, you know, how he must be reacting to this, even though we don't get to see in Brian's POV. And then Alex shoots Brian in the stomach from 5 feet away with the paintball gun. And this is such a not cool thing to do. I talk to people who play paintball, and getting hit with a paintball isn't fun, especially up close. So this is definitely not an honorable thing to do, to shoot his friend this close. And Brian's like, what the hell are you doing? You can't do that. You know, my eye out. And Alex basically doesn't give a fuck. He's like, I did what I did for kicking country. Alex is playing like he's 10 years old, you know, like he's running through the woods shooting people with his toy gun. And then we get a line that says, he snorted, forcing the last of the meth down the back of his nasal passages. And this is a nice reveal, because we're like a quarter of the way through the chapter, and we haven't had any mention before that Alex was high during this time. You could probably get a pretty good idea because, you know, Alex is high most of the time. And because there are all those weird internal monologue pieces that were in italics. And just a reminder for people, you can read along at indieauthoranswers.com. If just listening to me read the chapter isn't enough, I post the full text of each chapter in the blog post associated with the podcast episode. So you can go to indieauthoranswers.com, that'll take you to the most recent one, and then you can just skip back till you get to this one. Anyway, so Alex is high, and that's a nice reveal a quarter of the way through, and that helps explain some of his behavior so far. And that's the kind of thing like I was talking about at the beginning of the episode with the tip of a reveal. It's a little confusing why Alex is behaving so strangely, and then we get the reveal. He wasn't behaving strangely enough that in the beginning that it would have been too confusing. It's not like he squatted and took a dump in the parking lot or pulled his dick out. And, you know, it's like those kind of things you'd be like, whoa, what the fuck is he doing? But the way he was behaving now gets explained, and you're like, oh, okay, so he's high. And so we can see that Alex pretty much no longer gives a fuck about Brian when he's like, we need to get you some Kevlar or some tampons. So Alex has zero respect and love for Brian now, and that should be 100% clear. And that fact does make it seem a little strange why he says he's not going to tell Wiles. He says, you know, I don't want to see you get shot. Well, Alex's behavior would seem to indicate that he wouldn't care if Brian got shot. But this is all kind of setting up what is going to be part of, you know, what is part of Alex's major arc is, who does he choose? Does he choose Brian, or does he choose Wiles? And that's been setting up, you know, as he was first, Brian was his mentor, now Wiles is his mentor. And so you can see it's pretty plain, hopefully it's pretty plain, that that's going to be one of the things in the climax of the book, is Alex is going to be forced to choose between the two of them. And then we get to the part I already talked about, where Alex asks him about the girl who came over, and missed a great opportunity there to at least draw it out with a few lines of Alex debating internally whether or not he should ask. The only thing it says there is 4 words, he had to ask. And then that's it. So then they get around to Brian revealing, Brian learning that it's Megan. And this chapter does work from Alex's POV, or I should say, it could have worked from Alex's POV, because if I had inserted dilemma about whether or not he was going to actually ask Brian. Since I didn't, this chapter would have worked really well from Brian's POV, because we could have seen, you know, through Brian's internal monologue, how devastated he was to find out that he had sex with Wiles's sister-in-law. But I think I did a reasonable job with it by using lines like, you know, Brian's eyes become as big as dinner plates, he stumbles backwards, he's trembling, so we can see that Brian is pretty devastated by this. So when you're writing a multi-POV story, here's kind of a side piece of advice that still applies. When you're writing a multi-POV story, sometimes you're going to write a chapter that have two of your POV characters in it, and you're going to have to decide which character's POV do I use for this chapter. Now, I've read before, I heard this piece of advice somewhere, that you want to choose the POV of the character who experiences the most change in the chapter. And I don't know if I agree with that, but I think that you should consider, well, which character's head do we need to be inside? Do we need to be inside of? Which character would it benefit the reader most to see what's going on in their head when this is happening? Like, if you have two characters and one character knows a secret the other one knows, it's sometimes good to show that from inside that character. Like, if one character has a piece of information the other character doesn't, then we can see it from inside the eyes of the character who has the information. That gives an interesting leverage. Or if you were to write from the POV of the other character who doesn't have the information, but the reader knows it, then that provides a nice piece of tension too, because we can see the one character looking at the other character and maybe they're behaving strangely because they know something. That character doesn't know it. So you see, my point here is you need to think about which character's POV you're going to write it from. And one thing you're entirely free to do is to write it from one character's POV. Scratch all that. Go back and write it from the other one's POV if it isn't working. One thing that I've seen people do is to, for a scene that isn't working, is to write that scene in first-person POV from the point of view of one of the characters, just as an exercise to try to get to feel where the beginning, middle, and end of the chapter is, where the arc happens, where the tension is, where the conflict, where the scene and sequel should be. So that's just an exercise to help you find where the most important POV is. Anyway, well, I got off on a long tangent there that I didn't really intend to. So, after we have this reveal, a lot of what happens in the dialogue here between Alex and Wiles is exposition, trying to fill the plot holes with why Brian never knew that Megan was Wiles' sister-in-law. Because if you think about it, it's kind of unbelievable that Brian wouldn't have known this. I mean, Brian works for Wiles. Why wouldn't he know who Wiles' roommate is? Why wouldn't he know who Wiles' brother's wife is? Like, this whole plot line hinges a lot on the reader suspending a lot of disbelief. And it kind of works. I mean, I think that I essentially close a lot of the open loops with this, you know, with the, like, he's like, I didn't hang out with Chris Wiles. How would I know he was married? I never went over to Derek's house. Derek never told me his brother was married. Derek never told me who his roommate was. So I think that I have closed off all of the open questions as possible, but still, it's a little hinky, right? It's hinky that Brian still wouldn't have figured this out. But anyway, so they talk back and forth. They go over the same ideas again. Brian keeps saying, well, I didn't know, I didn't know, I didn't know. And even like, of all the women in Colorado, how'd you pick her? I met her at a laundromat. I hope it was worth it. And Alex keeps saying, you fucked up, son. And if you notice there, that word son, that's a word that Wiles uses to demean other people. He calls Brian son. He calls Alex son. So now that Alex has this information on Brian, Alex sees himself as elevated above Brian. Now he starts calling him son. That, I think, is some actually pretty good subtext. People's nicknames for each other, I think, can be important. Whether they're endearing or demeaning, people who use nicknames for each other, one, you have to be careful because you don't want to confuse your reader. I believe Megan's sister Hayden called her Megs. Now, that's probably okay. But if your nickname for somebody is, their name is John and their nickname is Stumpy, you need to be careful with giving readers too many names that might be confusing. So the dialogue in this chapter keeps going over and over again, the same points. If I'd known she was married, how could you not know about this? If I'd known she was married, how could you not know about this? Blah, blah, blah. And then they finally get around to what Alex is really upset about, and that's that Brian is selling meth. Now, I say that this is what Alex is really upset about because I know because I wrote this book. If you were reading this book, you might not actually realize that because all that happens is he says, he told me you've been selling meth for him, Alex said, the jealous tone bubbling up to the surface. Why the fuck are you selling meth for him? That's my gig. So we know now, it seems reasonably clear now that this is what Alex is at least equally upset about this as he is feeling disappointed in Brian for sleeping with Wiles's sister-in-law. So Brian mentions the deal, which if you remember, the deal is that Wiles would keep Alex out of trouble. Brian doesn't tell Alex this deal, but he's leaning forward on his knees like a beggar. We could see Brian is really distraught. Now Alex really has the power because Brian is begging him. He's saying, you got to help me. And Alex is like, I'm not going to say anything, which the chapter would have been better, I think, if Alex hadn't said, I'm not going to say anything to Wiles, if Brian had leaned forward on his knees like a beggar and said, please, Alex, you got to help me. And Alex had just been like, whatever, and turned and walked away, because then you would have been like, oh, God, what's going to happen next? Is Alex going to tell? Is Brian going to pack up and run? What's going to happen? Alex saying that he's not going to tell Wiles is kind of a letdown near the end of the chapter where it could have been left on a really great cliffhanger. Instead, the end of the chapter we get is that Brian's just a wreck, and he's like, stop saying that I fucked up. And anyway, so then Alex turns around, and we're kind of left in it's a really dark, despairing place, which is a good thing that you want your protagonist to be in. You want your protagonist at some point in the book to be in a place that's very dark, full of despair, where it seems like there's no hope. But actually, I think next week is the last chapter in part 3. And if that's right, things are about to get worse for Brian. He's going to get another piece of information that's maybe not even worse than this, but doesn't help at this time. So stay tuned for that for our next episode, and you can find out what that is. And as always, thanks for listening. I love you guys. And please go leave me a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever. And go to jimheska.com and sign up for my mailing list. You get free books. You can't beat free books, right? All right, peace out.
Well, that's it for this week's episode. I know, but don't be sad. We will be back. Please, don't forget to rate and review the show on iTunes and Stitcher or wherever else you happen to have found it. I mean, wherever it was, they're obviously got good taste, so please rate and review it anyway. Also, we'd like you to check out our blog at indieauthoranswers.com. You can also, I mean if you're up for it and you've got time, pop on over to jimheskett.com, and you can even sign up for the email list and you'll get free stuff. I mean, who doesn't like free stuff, right? Of course you do, so go on, you can do that as well. By the way, don't forget, you can also follow us on Twitter at Indie Answers, and you can like our Facebook page. And if you've still got time for that, then obviously you haven't got much time left for writing. And let's face it, that's what this is about in the end. So once you've done all that, why not go out there and write something? I mean, it's what Jim wants you to do. And if Jim wants you to do it, then you should really do it.